What do I call you, Naiman?
I don't mind. A nickname or a real name. Whatever is easier for you to pronounce, because Eyal is a bit difficult sometimes.
Eyal?
Yeah, I mean, Eyal, that's the name. I use Naiman because I live abroad and no one can pronounce it.
Sorry?
I live abroad and some people can't pronounce it. So
right.
Naiman,
yeah.
Naiman seems a bit easier sometimes.
Peter. Audio.
Yeah. Unmuted. Right.
All right. Your controls are here. Here you have 30 minutes because you're the last speaker. 25. Hello, everybody. You just joined us. Welcome to the DNS Developer Room. This is our final speaker for the day, Naiman, and he will talk to us about the history of blockchain and naming systems.
Okay, thank you. Thanks everyone, you know, who stayed till the end. I imagine it was a long day, at least it was for me. I'm going to talk today about the history of, you know, blockchain name systems. I'm Naiman, or Eyal. I'm from Israel, but I live in Poland. And, oh, that's fast. And I'm a mathematician, but I work on peer-to-peer websites in the last few years. If you don't know what it is, don't worry, because the main important thing regarding the talk is that those websites use blockchain name systems. So I had a chance to try most of them, speak with the developers of the main ones, even be engaged a bit in some of them, and that's why I do this talk. This is some projects that I did which use, you know, blockchain name systems. Don't focus on that, because, you know, the talk is not about me. I know that blockchain has a bad connotation, especially, I guess, in this thing. I'm not here to change your mind. I'm here to tell a story. And the story begins in 2001, where a guy called Zuko Wilcox sent a draft to his friends of some article that he wrote, and it began with the words, "Please do not propagate this information widely yet. I'm still working on it." Did they respect it? Absolutely not. This was propagated so hard that by now there is a Wikipedia page on it called Zuko's Triangle. Zuko's Triangle basically says that a name system, there are three properties that a name system can have or not have. One of them is secure. Secure means that, you know, two people cannot register the same name. The other one is human meaningful, which basically means you can choose which name you register out of the ones which are available, and hopefully, because you are human, the name would have some meaning. And the last one is decentralized, which means that in order to register a name or to verify a name, you can do it yourself without needing someone else, like a third party. And Zuko's Triangle says that for any specific name system, you can have at most two of those properties. You cannot have the whole three. sorry. Here are some examples, you know, name system that I guess everyone here know. DNS. DNS has human meaningful, for sure. It's also safe. It's not decentralized in the definition of Zuko's Triangle. Public-private key is safe. Yes, it's secure. It's, decentralized, yes, you can generate yourself, you can verify someone else on your own, but it is human meaningless. Those public keys are a monster. And my favorite one, the state ID, which is safe, but otherwise it is neither decentralized or human meaningful, which I think it's a shame. I would love to be able to choose my state ID, but, you know, states. Zuko's Triangle kind of, you know, was considered to be true for the first decade of this millennium. It was, from what I heard, I was not involved, well known within the name systems community that you can only have two and you shouldn't try to build a one that has the whole three. 2009, Bitcoin invented, and shortly afterwards, a year later, in some of the Bitcoin IRC chats, people started to say, hey, can we put name on a blockchain? Now, this continued in chats. There was a Bitcoin Talk forum. At some point, the legendary Aaron Schwartz heard about it, and he wrote an article, Squaring the Triangle, which basically says, if we put names on a blockchain, we can actually go around Zuko's triangle and can have a name system that have the whole free properties. This can be, you know, you can argue if a blockchain is really decentralized or not, in the sense that the requirement was that you can register and verify yourself, not register and verify with a blockchain. But for the sake of this talk, we think about a blockchain as a big dump object. It's a tool. It does what you want. I know it's not. I know that each blockchain, you know, has its own pros and cons. I'll be happy to argue about each of them afterwards on a beer, but not right now. Big dump object, by the way, I'm a huge science fiction fan. It's a term from science fiction. It's a subgenre of books that have a big dump object that does something. That's Ringworld by Larry Niven, classic science fiction book. If you haven't read it, I read it as a kid. I hope it's still fun now, but I really loved it. So, 2011, Namecoin was launched. Namecoin basically did exactly that, putting names on a blockchain. Here is some interesting trivia details. The names that it put on the blockchain were not actually names. It was just like, you know, 250 bytes on a chain, so you can put a sequence of 0, 1, then if it's a name or not, or how you interpreted it as an ASCII or Unicode or whatever is up to you. No one verifies everything besides the fact that the similar string, the similar bytes was not put before. No subdomains, because all you put is, you know, bytes. So there is no subdomains, it's just names that you register on it. They did have something which is called namespace. It was in the software layer, not on the blockchain. I want to put it out because they had basically two that they were promoting, the developers. One was D, which was for domain names for websites, but the other one was ID. And that's important because this already shows that the thinking was that those names are not necessarily for domains of computers that can be used for, you know, identify people. The cost was 0.1 Namecoin. NMC was, you know, a coin, currency of Namecoin. To adjust it was very difficult. I mean, you can raise it in a soft fork, but to reduce it, you need to do a hard fork. Also, to know how much, you know, it costs really in fiat money, depends, you know, on the moment that you buy it. And this didn't go to the developers or to finance anything. It was just burned, because in blockchain economy thinking, burning money is how you make money. Lecture a few days ago. This is the last blocks of Namecoin. One transaction basically just means the miner, so which means no one did anything there. As you see, at the moment, I think that it's a project which is still being maintained, but not really being used. And there's a question, why did it fail? Or at least I think it's failed. Namecoin people here, I apologize. And I think that there are two things that they did maybe wrong. First thing, they really copied Bitcoin's playbook one by one. But name is not money. Names are not money. It's a different animal. You can believe that 100 coins have value and it's okay. It's not contradicting. You can go to one store that accepts in dollar. You will pay in dollar. Another store in euros. You will pay in euros. Another one wants Bitcoin. Okay, you will get some Bitcoin. It's not contradicting. But no one wants to think that the same object have two names. This is not how it goes. Like historically, if I would think that some God has one name, and you will think that the same God has another name, there's a good chance we will go to a war. We will not accept each other's belief. But the other reason, which is maybe more deep, is that Namecoin developers had a huge challenge of building it. It was the second blockchain. It was the first NFT blockchain. It was the first sidechain. They had to invent merge mining. And also after it was launched, it was definitely not scalable, and also don't think very scalable right now. And they spent lots of their time improving the protocol and handling all those technical details. And they didn't have time to also think, how do I make it useful? What is it good for? And, you know, pushing it to users. So 2016, as I said, I entered the blockchain ecosystem. I asked people about Namecoin. I even bought one, I think, just a name, but I'm not 100% sure, or at least I intended to. The general feeling was that all the good names are squatted, there is nothing to do with it, and that names on a blockchain is nice for playing, but not really a useful use case. And in the same year, ENS was announced. ENS is a very different animal from Namecoin because it is built on top of Ethereum. And if you don't know anything about blockchain, you should know that to write an application on top of Ethereum is much easier than building a blockchain. Which means ENS, which is really well written and a nice engineering feat, it's still easier to write back from Namecoin. So they actually had time to have long discussions how to get people to use it. And they did two things. One of them, they said, okay, names are going to have an auction, so it won't be the fastest person who takes a name, but the one who agrees to pay the most. It's not necessarily the best solution, but at least, you know, they try something. But the other thing that, again, I see is very crucial is that they had updates. They could update their system relatively easily, and they were very open about it because when they launched in the 4th of May 2017, they called it ENS Temporary Registrar. And some of the messages, they even said, you know, we are not sure how to do it right, so that's why it's temporary. At some point, it will be changed. Be prepared for it. At the time, 2017 May, it was before the DAO hack, so it was not really common in blockchain to say that you are going to change things. This was still the time of, you know, immutable programs and code is law and stuff. How did it go? Well, it went in the same way like Namecoin, quite successful commercially in the beginning. I think that someone put a bid on the name exchange.eth of $2.6 million, so that's quite well. Like Namecoin, the money did not go to the pockets of the developers, but instead it was locked. So it was a deposit, and the moment that the name expired, you got it back, which if you want to fight squatters or, you know, speculators, it's not necessarily the best idea because they have nothing to lose. A year passed, and another blockchain name system was announced, Handshake. And I like to say that Handshake took one step backwards, three steps forward. I think it's kind of represented. And the step backward was that ENS was built on top of a blockchain, which could be very flexible. Handshake said, well, we are actually going to build our own blockchain. It was already in 2018, to have your own proof of work blockchain without updates was outdated. And I said, because I remember hearing about it, and I thought, okay, that's 2 years at least too late. But this thing provided them the ability to do something that the other name systems didn't do, and I don't think that anyone else does besides them at the moment. Because I said that decentralized is registering a name and verifying a name by yourself. But actually, to verify something on a blockchain is very difficult. In the worst case, you need to have the whole blockchain, which is huge. In the better case, you only need to have like 30 gigabytes of a proof, and that's not very practical for a name system. And Handshake really made an effort. The whole white paper is towards to have short proofs. So of a few kilobytes that this is the name owner, that's what the data that they attached to it. The other thing that they did is gift economy. I know that this is from Cory Doctorow books, but at the time this was very popular among the Bernie. Handshake actually is the first one that said, we want to replace ICANN, we want to be the new root of DNS. And then people were buying it. You know, Namecheap bought a Handshake domain for $750,000. There were people who were participating in auctions, and I checked now people still participate in auctions, not in these amounts, but it still seems to be a thing. There were some other funny stories that Sci-Hub joined Handshake and then left 2 days later because they thought they get a domain on the blockchain, but actually they got a subdomain on someone who has a domain on the blockchain, so there was nothing decentralized about it. It was a misunderstanding. But besides those things, I don't think that there was significant usage of Handshake, definitely not at the time. We'll get back to it towards the end, as you know, when we speak about what happens nowadays, but at the time it was mostly like the other blockchain systems, buying and selling. So the thing was a bit grim at this point, 2020, but don't worry, new decade, things starts to be going to be more happy soon. We have to go before that 1 year later, where ENS Permanent Registrar was launched. And they took 2 years of, you know, studying lesson and actually modified things. And the first thing that they did is auctions out. Because for the first few weeks, people actually participated in auctions for some specific name, like exchange.eth. But by the time that I wanted to buy an ENS domain, which was Neyman, no one participated on the auction besides me. And it was just an annoying process for the user. So they said, auctions are good for the beginning. Afterwards, you don't need them, which I think makes lots of sense. The other thing that they did is that by this point, they were almost broke. I mean, they started with $1 million grants from Ethereum Foundation. I'm not sure if, I don't remember if they got anything else on the way, but you know, time passes, you have to pay people's salary. They were almost broke. And then they thought, I mean, their idea was to be a non-profit that, you know, gets stuff from donations and grants. But 2019, the blockchain had a winter. No one gave them any money. And then they figured out, well, there is all this locked money here. And why do we actually lock it? It's not good for anything. It's not protecting against squatters because they can try to squat on them. If they don't manage, they just get the money back. And they did the next step. Money goes to ENS organization, which is an NGO, which means it's supposed to be fed into the development. And overnight, they became from an organization which is almost broke to an organization that has millions of dollars. This was important. I was already developing for ENS before, but it was a side project. And when this happened, you start to think as a developer, well, maybe I should take it more seriously because now they have money that they have to give someone. They are an NGO. They are supposed by their declaration legally to give it.